Paul Mottole. Here on FM, we continue our Book of the Week, Deep, by the American journalist James Nestor. It explores the extraordinary world of freediving, in which swimmers dive deep without oxygen or scuba gear. Today, he meets some scientific divers. The reader is William Hope.
Réunion is the southernmost outpost of the French Republic. It's a tiny dot situated 6,000 miles west of Australia and about 400 miles from the east coast of Madagascar. A tropical getaway with all the modern conveniences of the mainland, but none of the chilly weather, Réunion would be a paradise if it weren't for one notable problem: the constant threat of being eaten by sharks. In recent years, for reasons nobody can explain, shark attacks have been on the rise. In 2010, bull sharks suddenly started going on the rampage, killing and mauling swimmers and surfers along the island's most luxurious beaches and resorts. The worldwide average for shark fatalities is 6 a year. 2 fatalities and a half a dozen injuries occurred on tiny Réunion in the span of 3 months. It was particularly vexing for Fred Buil, a photographer and shark conservationist I'd met at the Freediving World Championships in Greece. He called me a week after I returned home to discuss the more considered use of freediving in shark research. "Freediving, it is also a tool," he told me over the crackling phone line in his lilting French-Belgian accent. It was a way to get in touch with the ocean's animals, and he hoped to help save them. With this in mind, I was invited to view a different kind of freediving, one with a purpose. A handful of researchers planned to spend 10 days diving, studying, and tagging tracking transmitters to the dorsal fins of man-eating sharks. I had first met Fred Buil in a hotel bar in Kalamata, Greece. I asked him what he did for a living. "I freedive some," he said, "and I take a few pictures." It wasn't until I looked him up on the internet later that night that I discovered he was legendary, one of the earliest competitive freedivers and one of the most sought-after underwater photographers in the world. Buil was traveling to Réunion to stop a shark slaughter. In the wake of the most recent attacks there, angry locals were trying to catch and kill the entire local bull shark population. This would decimate Réunion's pristine ocean ecosystem. His plan was to join a troop of voluntary marine researchers and freedive down about 80 feet to the sea floor. There, he would place satellite tags on the bull shark's dorsal fins. These tags would alert locals if they came too near shore. Buil believed that the recent attacks were accidents. Bull sharks, he said, don't normally like to eat people. By tracking their movements, his team might be able to identify the cause, help remedy it, and save the bull sharks from annihilation. One could understand why locals might see things differently. Bull sharks are among the toughest and deadliest marine predators. They eat almost anything with a face: fish, other bull sharks, sea turtles, birds, dolphins, crabs. Along with tiger and white sharks, bull sharks are responsible for more attacks on people than any other shark species on Earth. Tagging isn't easy. The sharks get nervous and swim away, or they're injured in the process. Sometimes they bite. Buil told me the safest, most effective way to tag Réunion's sharks will be to meet them on their own terms by free diving down deep enough to slap on a transmitter. He would meet me in Réunion in 3 weeks. Fred Buil walks through the security gates of Roland Garros International Airport in Saint-Denis, the capital of the island. A throng of reporters waits at the exit gate, cameras rolling. In the past few days, local media have painted Buil as a kind of shark whisperer. He is visibly annoyed by the reporter's presence and pushes his way through the exit doors to the waiting pickup truck of local engineer Fabrice Schnoller. "There's no hero here, no quick solution," Buell says. "It's just the beginning of a long process." That evening, Buell, Schnoller, and I take my rental car to a restaurant overlooking a beach with a perfect curling wave. It's an eerie scene. There's nobody on the beach at all. "It's illegal to be on the beach now. You swim in the water, they will put you in jail," says Schnoller, taking a seat at the patio table. He spends his time running DARE-WIN, short for Database Regional for Whales and Dolphins, a nonprofit organization focused on dolphin and whale communication research. "It's very crazy," says Buell. "Sharks don't like to eat humans. That's what's so weird. Something is bringing them close to shore. But what?" Schnoller takes out a pen and begins drawing on the back of a napkin. It's a picture of the shark tracking system he's invented, which he calls Shark Friendly, an acoustic system that follows a shark in real time. Most tagging systems work with satellite technology. It's accurate, but satellite tags offer only backstory. He believes Réunion's surfers and swimmers need to know where the homicidal sharks are now, not where they were yesterday. Shark Friendly relies on a weave of acoustic systems, beacons, and satellites. When a tagged shark gets about 1,500 feet from shore, beacons placed off the coast will recognize the tag's high-frequency signal and relay an alert to a satellite, which in turn will signal a computer server that updates a website and mobile app to warn people that a shark is nearby. Nobody has tried to set up a system like this before. Our first 2 days at sea are failures. After hours on the boat, we haven't seen a single bull shark. 3 days later, Schnoller and I arrive at La Possession Marina for our third shark-tagging attempt. Diving in this marine sanctuary is illegal, but Schnoller and Buell will take the risk of arrest or injury in order to increase the chances of finding and tagging a shark. The shark-friendly team has created an underwater sound system that will broadcast the noise made by an injured fish. "Sharks are opportunists," Schnoller tells me, "and they will never pass up an easy meal." Joining us is Guy Gazo, one of the best freedivers in Réunion. He can hold his breath underwater for more than 5 minutes. I'm amazed to discover that he's 74 years old. He looks 20 years younger. We leave the harbor and head toward a bull shark hotspot. About a mile off the coast, we cut the motor, and Buell and Gazo slip on neoprene gloves, boots, and two-piece wetsuits. They grab their goggles and spear guns, and then descend into the diamond-clear water. They disappear for several minutes, then return with fish wriggling on the ends of their spears. Sitting on the deck, they slit the heads of foot-long tarpon they've just speared. They spill the innards into a makeshift strainer constructed from a discarded washing machine drum. The strainer will broadcast the smell of fish blood to sharks hundreds of feet away. While the divers are busy baiting, the others set up the underwater sound system. Now, with the water bloody and thumping with kingfish screams, Buell fixes an acoustic tag to his spear gun and prepares himself to go deep. Through my goggles, I watch Gazo in the distance, descending slowly amid plumes of fish blood into the darker depths, spear gun in hand. Buell follows, paddling quickly. When he reaches neutral buoyancy, he puts his arms at his side and glides effortlessly down. No matter how many times I see this, it's always an awe-inspiring and spooky thing to watch. Buell surfaces a few minutes later. "Oui, shark!" he cries. We turn up the volume on the car stereo. Schnaller and I peer over the side of the boat but can't see anything. Weil pulls his spear out of the water. The acoustic tag is still stuck to the end of it. He explains that the sharks were disturbed by all the commotion and left. Schnaller starts the motor, and we beeline back to the marina. While nobody knows exactly how sharks can navigate in permanently black, deep waters, most marine researchers believe that tiny bumps on the sharks' heads and the sixth sense of magnetoreception have something to do with it. These little bumps, which look like tiny freckles along the shark's nose, are actually pores filled with electrically conductive jelly. All animals, including humans, generate weak electrical fields from neurons constantly firing off electrical signals. A shark's body works like an enormous antenna, tuning in to the signals pulsing around it. When the shark picks up a signal it likes, it moves in closer. If the signal seems like something it could eat, it takes a bite. Buil tells me that the full wetsuit he and the other free divers are wearing isn't meant to keep them warm, but to dampen the electrical signals their bodies send out. In the end, it isn't Buil, but 74-year-old Guy Gazzo who tags Réunion's man-eating bull sharks. After 10 days of failed attempts, Buil has to head off to another job. At his suggestion, Gazzo retools the spear guns to shoot at double strength and heads back out. In one day, he tags three sharks, enough for an initial test of the cutting-edge shark tracking system. Schnaller and Gazzo spend the next month watching tagging data, trying to identify patterns. They notice an obsessive congregation around the marina. They freedive into the area again, this time to investigate, not tag. The seafloor outside the marina immediately catches their attention. It's an enormous trash heap of plates, food, and refuse. It turns out that boaters at Saint-Gilles had been using the port entrance as a trash can. The bull sharks, always up for an easy meal, have gathered there to scavenge. The humans who were attacked at the adjacent beaches had likely gotten in the way and were caught up in a localized feeding frenzy. Surprisingly, the tagging discovery didn't scare people away. Instead, it opened up a new cottage industry. Tour operators began running shark sightseeing snorkeling trips near the garbage dump. "We accomplished our goal," says Schnaller, by which he means he's managed to educate people. Réunion's citizens now have a better understanding of the bull shark, its habits, and the human role in violent exceptions to those habits. 2 months after the shark-friendly campaign was initiated, the French government began reopening the beaches to the public.
Deep by James Nestor was read by William Hope. It was abridged and produced by Pippa Vaughan and is a Loftus production for BBC Radio 4. And tomorrow he will track down the mythical sea women of Japan. This afternoon, the BBC science correspondent Rebecca Morell will delve further into the exploration of the deepest parts of the ocean in the abyss at 3:30. The UK government and UNICEF are co-hosting a Girls Summit. The aim is to end female genital mutilation. Jenny Murray will have more on that in Woman's Hour after the news.
So you've always lived in this dark house?
Is it dark? I don't notice that, really.
Ian McKellen stars in Balzac's story of a miserly father and his innocent young daughter.
This is not fair.
Of course it's not fair. Nothing in this sorry mess is fair.
Rose Tremaine's dramatisation of Eugénie Grandet on Sunday at 3 on BBC Radio 4.